welcome to episode 70 of the DFA podcast. I'm your host, Brian Grossnick, and joining me, as always, RJ Anderson of CBS Sports. RJ, how's it going today?
It's going well. How about with yourself?
Not too bad. Not too bad. We got a lot to talk about today after a little bit of time off. Plenty of minor moves, call-ups, injuries. I really want to hit the call-ups because there's a lot of interesting prospects who've been brought up. But first and foremost, I think we're going to talk about some kind of weird stuff that's going on. There's some weird positional moves that we're going to get into and some surprise injuries. And I think we'll kick things off with some big name pitchers hitting the DL with some injuries and ones that we aren't really sure how they're going to affect both the pitchers and the teams that they pitch for. So I would start it off with the big move of the week or last 2 weeks being injuries to Chris Sale of the Boston Red Sox and Trevor Bauer of the Cleveland Indians. Sale just came off the DL and is going back on with some shoulder inflammation, while Trevor Bauer's got a fibula break, and according to Michael Bowman of The Ringer, possibly some CIA nanites that he's dealing with. So both these injuries are to pitchers who have really been, excelled this season, been a big part of their team successes. And so I want you to talk a little bit about what you think this means for the Red Sox and for the Indians going forward to the end of the season and maybe in the playoffs.
Well, obviously it changes Boston's priorities a little bit because now their goal for the next, 6 weeks or so is to get Sale healthy. Mm-hmm. I know that they can be comfortable entering the postseason without Sale because while that's a solid rotation, you don't have the impact guy that you have when Sale is healthy. And of course, the funny thing is he made one start in between DL stints, and he threw 5 one-hit innings against the Baltimore Orioles and struck out 12 while walking none. And it's like, if that's what a non-100% Sale can do against the Orioles, imagine what he can do against them when he's, 90% or 95% or what have you. With Cleveland, this is a pretty big deal to them now and later, because if Bauer is not healthy, that changes the entire complexion of that team, doesn't it? Bauer has arguably been their best performing starter of the season. If not, he's certainly right there with Kluber, and you take him out of the equation, and yeah, they still have Clevinger, they still have Carrasco, but this kind of would force Shane Bieber into that number four starter role in the postseason, and I think that's probably not what they want, because I think they would prefer Bieber be able to pitch out of their bullpen, which strengthens and deepens the relief corps. So of the two, you don't want to see this either way, because when you start talking about shoulder injuries, especially two shoulder DL stints in about a month's time, you start getting concerned that there's something more there. But of the two, I would feel like, Bowers is probably more meaningful in the short term than Sales if they get to the postseason. I mean, this team could win 117 games even without mm-hmm. Sale being around. So I don't want to pretend like their shot at, postseason glory ends if Sale misses the first round or whatever. But it seems like both of them could be significant, I guess, is what I'm trying to say here.
Yeah, I think they're both significant, too. I'm definitely of the camp where the Sale injury is much, much more important than the Trevor Bauer injury. So I really do think, you mentioned that the Indians would be forced into Shane Bieber into that kind of like that fourth starter role if Bauer's not ready to be back for the playoffs. And to me, that's kind of like, well, no big deal. The Indians right now probably have 4 of the top 15 or 20 pitchers in baseball in their starting rotation. Yeah, Bauer's been the best of them, but Kluber, Carrasco, and Clevinger have been phenomenal this year. I mean, they've all been really, really good. The Red Sox, when you look at their rotation, Sale's been really good. Rick Porcello's been okay. And everybody else is really kind of a question mark there. And if Sale's not good to go in the playoffs for the Red Sox, I'm a lot more concerned. And like you said, the shoulder injury, with it being a repeated shoulder injury, that concerns me a lot more for the long term, just like you said. So maybe he's going to have some issues on and off for the rest of the year in the playoffs, something that could linger into next year. While with Bauer, it's a broken fibula. It's not exactly the type of injury you expect to really hold him back for the long term. So for me, I definitely feel like the Red Sox are more at risk here. They're not at risk of missing the playoffs, for sure. I mean, they've already got 88 wins. They're in. But I do get really concerned as to what this team looks like in the playoffs. I see them maybe having a strong turnaround and losing in, 5 games in the ALDS if Sale isn't there to kind of anchor that rotation.
Right, because the rotation would be what? It would be Porcello, David Price, Nate Eovaldi, and then Brian Johnson, I
Yeah,
think.
or they might bring Pomeranz back in to try to do, they could do a Pomeranz and Johnson kind of tandem thing, or they just go straight bullpen. None of the options are good.
No, you're right. The fall off between Sale and whoever would replace him would seem more significant than Bauer and Bieber, if that's who they would go with. But it's also possible that these teams would try to pull off like a three-man rotation or something. And again, Boston might win 117 games. They might make quick work of whoever the wild card team is, depending on, if their bats are all synced up and hot or whatnot. So you never know.
Well, I mean, if the wild card team is the Yankees, I'd be really concerned. I mean, the Yankees, the wild card team could be the second best team in the American League.
Could be.
There's a very good chance of that. And if it's Red Sox Yankees in the first round of the playoffs, you can't really take anything off the table. Like, literally anything could happen. I know the Red Sox have kind of had the Yankees number at times this season, but I mean, and the Yankees have their own injury issues to deal with, and some surprising performances recently from Luis Severino. So, it's not like anything is a given at this point. But yeah, I would just be a little more concerned if we were talking about, it would be very different if the Red Sox were dealing with a David Price injury, even their second best pitcher, because Sale has so far and away been the best pitcher on this team, and I think there's an argument that he's been far and away the best pitcher in the American League. So far this year. So that brings me to kind of another thing that I wanted to talk about here is that Sale and Bauer were kind of one and two to me in the American League Cy Young race. And I wonder if this might throw things off and how you feel about the American League Cy Young race with Sale and Bauer both going down with an injury.
Well, it's not just you. They're also 1-2 in BRAF's WAR among AL pitchers, with Kluber, Blake Snell, and Justin Verlander rounding out the top five. And of course, if you look at innings pitched too, it's kind of funny because you have Verlander, you have Kluber, you have Bauer, you have arguably the best pitcher named here in James Shields, and then Dallas Keuchel. So you have the best pitchers in baseball basically right in that group. And Sale's already missed some time, so he's not on that list. But yeah, you're talking about probably the guys who'd be 1 and 2, because you look at ERA, Sale's number one, Bauer's number three. And we can keep going through all these metrics. The point is, Bauer and Sale both rate pretty highly in just about every category that historically voters seem to favor. I guess the exception is wins, because Bauer is actually not that well. Like, they're both tied for eighth place with 12 wins, so whatever. I guess this kind of opens the door for Kluber to win the Cy Young, right? Because he's right there. He's going to finish among the league leaders in innings. He's right there in WAR with Bauer. He's like a little bit less than a half, excuse me, a little bit more than a half a win away. Now, Sale's far and away, but again, with the innings factor, you probably might not see guys. I don't know. You might see him still consider that, but I feel like Kluber has a chance to steal this award now. Do you agree? Or even Verlander, I suppose.
Well, I think there's a few different options that, and that's what's so interesting. You talk about the Baseball Reference WAR, which is calculated based on runs allowed per nine innings. If you look at Fangraphs WAR, if you look at Baseball Prospectus's WAR, Sale and Bauer are still the number two guys, but depending on how you want to value things, it really can be a large cross-section of who the next guy is. Beyond those one and two. I mean, some metrics will talk about Kluber, some metrics will talk about Gerrit Cole, Verlander. Severino's got the wins. He's the one with 16 wins, so it really kind of opens things up. To me, I'm kind of leaning towards Gerrit Cole as my AL Cy Young winner at this point. He got off to such a hot start. Like Verlander, he's eaten a lot of innings. He's 10 innings behind Verlander, which is not a huge amount, especially when Verlander's made two extra starts. But I do think Cole has done a little bit more in terms of his strikeout rate. He's been very dominant, and he hasn't given up nearly as many home runs as Verlander has. So I really kind of like him as as my pick if, for example, Sale or Bauer had to miss the entire rest of the season. I kind of lean his way over Verlander or Kluber, even though they have a few more innings on him. Going into the rest of the season, but it's tough. I mean, it's just a matter of optics, I feel like at this point. I don't think anybody has a really strong case if Sale and Bauer were to miss the rest of the season.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm surprised you didn't mention Edwin Diaz. Here, I thought you would have said that the closer should get the Cy Young Award.
No, never agree with that. I hate the idea of closers winning the Cy Young most of the time because it's if they could start, they'd be starting and they'd be better. So.
There you go. That's a good motto to live by if you're a relief pitcher. If you
Yeah.
could start, you'd start and you'd be better.
Yeah, right, exactly. That's some real Yogi Berra garbage wisdom right there.
Yeah,
So I can't claim much for that. But yeah, so there's some really interesting things going on, I feel like, with these teams. I'd really like to see some separation. I'd love to see both these guys come back. The thing that throws me is that Sale's short on innings by a considerable amount. And I really do think he's been the best. Which now you get into that discussion of, well, how many innings would he need to pitch to be able to beat out Bauer, who's been so close to him but pitched, I don't know, 20 more innings at this point, and is probably more likely to pitch more innings between now and the end of the season.
yeah, and I don't know the answer to that. And it reminds me a little bit of what we were weighing in the AL MVP race because Mookie Betts had, I don't know what it is now, but it was like 100 fewer plate appearances than most of the top dogs. So, you have to weigh this. And I really don't know because when a guy is leading in counting stats, even though he has 100 fewer plate appearances, I feel like that kind of tells you exactly who you should vote for. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean it's tough. It's really tough at this point. You have I mean probably the seven or eight best players in baseball right now are all in the American League. And boy, does that make things challenging. And now Betts is has as many plate appearances as Mike Trout. Both those guys have been hitting unbelievably well. And then you get into the guys like Jose Ramirez and Francisco Lindor who are doing it with the glove, and it's like, man, this is just really tough to parse in the American League this year.
And down the ballot, you have Alex Bregman, who might be the most underrated player in baseball. Oh, and also Matt Chapman, who also might be the most underrated player in baseball. I've had two people on Twitter this year yell at me for saying that Matt Chapman is really, really good, and it's inexplicable to me.
Yeah.
The guy hits for average. He walks. He hits for power. He plays an amazing third base. If anything, you think he would be overrated because he's such a highlight reel magnet that you would think guys are thinking he's like the best third baseman of all time rather than just, an elite third baseman right now. I don't know. I don't know what it's going to take for the people to recognize Matt Chapman. Maybe the A's winning that division or whatever. Also, JD Martinez, he's not going to win the Triple Crown, but he's close enough that you could see, maybe him getting a little bit of a bump because of that. And we're not even talking about guys like Andrelton Simmons. We're talking, in Andrelton Simmons, you have arguably the best defensive shortstop in baseball, a guy who's walked more than he struck out, and he's going to finish the year like a 300 average. That,
Yeah,
you know?
it's fascinating. And like I don't Andrelton Simmons is one of the best players in baseball. If he was in the National League, I think he'd be a real consideration for MVP. And in the American League, you cannot even fathom a world where he would be first in MVP voting because Francisco Lindor does everything he does better, except for maybe the defense. He's close on defense. He's not quite as good as defense. But you talk about all these phenomenal things Simmons is doing. Well, he's going to hit 300. He's hitting for a little bit of power. He's playing world-class defense. And it's like, oh, Francisco Lindor is doing that, but he also almost has 30 home runs.
Yeah, that's a fair point. I can't make a case. I'm trying to think of a case for Andrelton. There's nothing because you can't give him the benefit of a winning team. You can't give him the benefit of being the best player on his team. You could argue he was the third best player on that team, depending on
Sure.
how you figure out Ohtani with the missed time and all. And yeah, that's
So,
wild.
with if you had to pick today who your American League MVP is, who'd you pick?
Well, I just actually did the preview for CBS, and I said Betts because he has all those numbers. I mean, he leads the American League in WAR. I'm not sure if that's true across all three WAR
It's not,
versions,
but
but
that's interesting
that's a
that
given.
he does
That's a
lead.
given. But he also is a well-rounded player, so you're not talking about a guy whose value might be missed by voters who don't look at, the big, look at every aspect of a game and weigh them appropriately or what have you. But also, he's on the best team in baseball. I mean, this is a team who could conceivably, again, win 117 games. Like, there's a chance of that. So I think he's going to get credit for all of that. And I don't know. I certainly understand the arguments for Trout and for Ramirez, and maybe even for Lindor to some extent. But I think Betts probably has them all beat. And it wouldn't surprise me if Lindor and Ramirez kind of split votes to some extent.
Oh,
I don't know
yeah.
how often that actually happens, but I could see that happening. And with Trout, I mean, you look at the numbers between Trout and Betts is right there or better across the board. And he also plays again on a winning team. So I think Betts is going to get the award this year. Do you agree with that?
Will he win the award? Yes, I do think he will win the award. Do I think that if the season were to end today that he deserves the award? No, I don't. I think that he's one of the three best players in baseball. I don't think there's any argument there. He's had one of the three best seasons. He's probably one of the three best players. But I think that Ramirez and Lindor splitting the vote's a real thing. Ramirez has gotten almost 50 or 60 plate appearances ahead of Betts and Trout, which is very impressive. There's a chance that he beats JD Ramirez for the home run title, which is, I mean, just, I can't even fathom it. You look at Betts and Trout, they're both really good base runners, but Ramirez is better. And Ramirez has been playing a tougher defensive position all season. So I kind of go Ramirez as the all-around player. And if I was just going on like who's been able to be the better hitter, well, Trout's been a better hitter than Betts this season.
Yes, then.
Just barely. Just barely. But then again, Betts is going to win the batting title and play for a team that wins over 100 games. So I think from a voting standpoint, it's definitely going to be Betts at this point, unless somebody decides that, well, Jose Ramirez or Francisco Lindor has done this over 100 more plate appearances than Mookie Betts has. You can see, like, he's going to win that batting title, Betts is. He's been unbelievably good. It's just almost a shame that none of these guys play in the National League, because in the National League for the MVP race, you probably got to look at like Freddie Freeman, Nolan Arenado, or maybe one of the pitchers. I think this might be a year for a pitcher for the National League MVP, which would be kind of wild.
Lorenzo Cain probably merits mention too, but I agree that it's kind of a muddled mess. And yeah, I don't really know who the favorite is going to be there. Does Aaron Nola or Max Scherzer or DeGrom get the nod? I really don't know.
Well, and I mean, when you look at the National League, oftentimes you want to give the MVP or the Cy Young nod to a player on a winning team. And the best singular performers in the National League this year haven't really been playing for winning teams. You mentioned Kane on the Brewers, that's definitely a consideration. Freddie Freeman on the Braves, definitely a consideration. But then the other guys who have been really standing out in the National League are guys like you mentioned, Scherzer and DeGrom are playing for teams that are not likely to make the playoffs. Nolan Arenado, we don't know if the Rockies are going to make it to the playoffs. Matt Carpenter, the Cardinals aren't going to the playoffs. And so when you look at everything, I'm looking at Freeman and someone I never would have expected at the beginning of the season is Paul Goldschmidt, given the terrible start that he got off to, but he's turned into regular great Paul Goldschmidt. So I think it's Freeman right now in the National League, but I wouldn't be surprised if there's a groundswell of support for either Scherzer or DeGrom as well.
That makes sense. I thought you were leading up to a Javier Baez
No, no,
vote.
nope,
Poor
no.
Javi. Also, if we do open it up to guys who aren't necessarily playing on winning teams, you almost at some point have to mention Eugenio Suarez as a down ballot guy because he is having a phenomenal season and it doesn't seem like anyone's noticing. He is, what, third in the National League in OPS plus. I believe he leads in RBIs. He's right near the top in home runs as well. I think seventh, eighth, somewhere in that range. So,
Yep.
and if we are talking about winning teams, Trevor Story probably gets some consideration. I know he's
Of
probably going to split votes with Arenado, but he's having a good year.
he is. But I mean, like, when you talk about Trevor Story, I can't see putting him ahead of Javi Baez, and I don't think Javi Baez is an MVP candidate. I definitely would be looking at most of those other guys ahead of him. When you talk about Suarez, Scooter Gennett is also one of probably the 15 best players in the National League this year, which is a crazy, crazy thing to think of.
Yeah, that was one of the funniest things of the All-Star game too, is because you sit there and you look at Jeanette and you're like, wow, imagine if the Brewers had him, they would need a second baseman. And then you say, well,
I
then again, Aguilar, that kind of balances out, right? They found an All-Star first baseman
It's
and got rid
wild.
of an All-Star second baseman, so I guess they're okay with that probably.
And I can probably guess the answer to this, but for the National League Cy Young, who do you have atop that? I've got my guess in my head as to who you're going to say, and you can probably guess who I'm going to say, but let's hear it.
I mean, I named all three guys who I think are realistic candidates earlier. Obviously, you know, I'm a big guy on one loss record, so not sure I can give it to DeGrom. But I don't know. Are we going to freak out if Scherzer wins it or if, Aaron Nola gets it or whatever? Are we? Because I don't freak out about any of this stuff. But, of course, you know, DeGrom. Yeah, it should be DeGrom, in my opinion. But I'm not going to freak out if someone else gets it. I know everyone else probably will because of the one loss thing. But for me, I don't care about awards, man.
Well, freaking out is one thing. Max Scherzer winning a Cy Young Award when he has a season like this, nobody should be freaking out about that. Yeah. I do think Jacob DeGrom deserves the Cy Young. I think that you can make very few cases that Scherzer has been better, on average than DeGrom has been. But if Scherzer wins and there's a difference, like half a win difference in their ERAs, and Scherzer's going to throw more innings, and Scherzer has proven that he's a Cy Young caliber pitcher time and time again. So nobody should be upset about that. And Aaron Nola makes a great case for it, too. I don't think there's anything wrong with Nola. He just hasn't been quite as dominant to get to his, you know, runs against performance as the other two guys. I think if you look at DRA, if you look at some of the peripheral focus metrics, you got to kind of put Scherzer and DeGrom ahead of that. But no, I mean, I do think DeGrom deserves it. I think that ERA is just sick, and I don't believe that he's been able to do this with the kind of defensive support that he's had behind him either. But yeah, if Scherzer wins, I mean, they're both phenomenal pitchers this season. Nobody should be too mad.
Yeah, but DeGrom should win, for the record.
Yeah, for the record, definitely. Down ballot guy, surprisingly, John Gray is going to make it. He has had the worst ERA this year, but his peripherals are fine. He's actually been so good. He's going to finish the season as possibly the greatest pitcher in Rockies history.
Yeah, he's been dominant since he came back from that demotion too. He has been phenomenal. And John Gray, if you're listening, go ghost hunting with me, pal.
That's the main reason why I wanted to bring that up.
Yeah, and you know who else is pitching well pitching at least solidly for Colorado, who doesn't get any attention whatsoever?
German?
Marquise.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He has been, I mean, his strikeout rate is, I know it's over a batter per inning. I don't know if it's quite at 10 yet, but he's a good pitcher, man. That Corey Dickerson, Jake McGee trade, it used to seemingly be in Tampa Bay's favor because, you know, Kevin Padlo was supposed to be a solid prospect, but now, you know, Marquise, I don't know. It's an interesting deal. I don't think there's a clear winner or loser at this point because of how things have played out. But interesting deal, and it seemed to work out okay for both sides.
Yeah, absolutely. But, and I'm very surprised to see Gray and Freeland and Marquez pitching as well as they did in concert this year. And I think it speaks a lot to the future for the Rockies franchise, which I didn't really see as being too bright we're going to be soon into a post-Arenado world in Colorado, more than likely. So it'll be interesting to see how I think 2019 is going to be a super, super important season for Colorado.
Yeah, they have some infield prospects who can, in theory, slot in. So
yeah,
we'll see if they trade him or if they go one more year or whatever. But if we're talking about the NL Cy Young down ballot guys who I'm most surprised by, I'll say Miles Mikolas, because I did not expect this guy to get Cy Young votes this year early on. You know, it just, it's not a profile that jumps off the screen to you.
Oh, gosh, no.
Yeah, and, you know, you saw him early on, and there was a little bit of a struggle. I don't know his exact numbers, but it was like, man, is this going to actually work? Or is this guy just going to be like a number four, number five? And to his credit, he's had a really good season. And with Carlos Martinez, you know, missing time and now finishing the year in the bullpen, you can make a pretty good case he's been their best starting pitcher for the season.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question he's been the best starting pitcher for the season. So it's weird because in the NL Cy Young race, like you were saying, you talk about DeGrom and Scherzer and Nola are the guys you expect. But like the other guys that you'd expect, you know, Kershaw, Yu Darvish, guys who are great pitchers on great teams, Alex Wood coming off last year, even the other guys in the Cubs rotation, like Quintana and Lester and Hendricks, you would expect all those guys to be in contention for the Cy Young. And instead, we're looking at, like, Zach Wheeler has to be in the conversation at this point. Mike Foltynewicz, Nick Pivetta. I mean, really, like, some weird guys that have popped up. Patrick Corbin. If you were going to pick which of the starting pitchers from the Arizona Diamondbacks would be in best contention for the NL Cy Young this year, Patrick Corbin to start the season probably would have been fifth on my list.
Really? Yeah, I guess I can see that.
Granky,
you're a big Zach Ray, Godley guy, right?
I would probably put Zach Godley ahead of him at the start of the season. I might have put Taiwan Walker up there if he were healthy. Like, it's just wild to me that he's turned it around so much this season and looks so good.
Yeah, it's good timing for him, too, because he's about to hit free agency, and the Yankees have been tied to him for seemingly ever. So it'll be interesting to see if they chase his tail this winter and try to get him on board.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me at all if he fills the CC Sabathia role for that team next year.
That would make sense. Be a smart addition.
I agree with you. I think he'd be a smart addition for a lot of teams. You still worry about his health long term, but yeah, I would open up the piggy bank for him. Well, that's fun to talk about awards, which, like you said, you don't care about at all. So it was more fun for me, I assume. But let's talk about change gears a little bit and talk about something a little bit different. We kind of got into it a little bit when you mentioned Carlos Martinez. He's one of the guys I wanted to talk about in this next segment. There have been some role changes for some guys coming off the disabled list, or in particular one guy who hasn't, that seem counterintuitive, might be nice, surprising changes in guys' roles. Martinez moving to the bullpen is one of them, and I think we'll get into that specifically. But we also have finally seen Felix Hernandez of the Mariners move into the bullpen after years and years of being the main rotation cog for the Seattle Mariners. And then at the same time, on the positional side, the Mariners have finally been able to bump Robinson Cano off the restricted list, and he's playing first base. And not because, I mean, why move D. Gordon off second base, which you already did earlier in the season? And then to me, the weirdest and most interesting one is Will Myers coming off the disabled list for the Padres, and the Padres installing him at third base, which is very, very weird to me. So there's four guys we've talked about in new roles: Hernandez, Martinez, Cano, and Myers. Which of those guys do you want to talk about first?
Oh, Myers. Absolutely Myers. You're right. It is very weird because Will Myers does not really have a history of playing third base. He did it for like 15 games in the minor leagues just to increase his versatility when he was back in the Royals system. And now he started like 5 or 6 or 7 games at third base since returning from the DL. And he's not even the only guy they're moving around. They've also had Christian Villanueva, mm-hmm. who was normally their third baseman, taking reps up the middle. So it's at least possible that we're going to see Villanueva at short/second base at times the rest of the year. And I don't know if either thing's going to work, but I'll say this. I admire the creativity because they've gotten to the point where they seem to have not a stacked outfield necessarily, but a loaded outfield for next year. You know, Renfro has had a good season. You're not going to give up on Margot because, gosh, Lord knows you shouldn't give up on Margot anyway. Right. I love that guy entering the year, and I think he's still going to be a star. And then you have a couple of interesting outfielders who you could conceivably see, you know, being your starter next year, whether it's Franchi Cordero. I don't think they would consider Franmil Reyes that way, but
so that's
the point is – oh, hold on. I have one more to throw in the mix. Then and they also have Francisco Mejia, who may end up in the outfield. So they have a logjam building there.
I agree with you. That's true. And Franchi Cordero, I think, needs a shot. So I get that. But for the end of the season, I don't buy Franmil Reyes, and they're giving him everyday reps in the outfield, except for when they swap in Travis Jankowski occasionally, who sometimes is a platoon partner for Margot and sometimes will be a platoon partner for Reyes. But to me, it seems very weird to not run Will Myers out there in the outfield unless you really think that Will Myers might be your third baseman next year. And so I do applaud everyone who's ever read anything that I write or listened to anything I said knows that I absolutely love moving guys to third base and trying them out, even if it doesn't seem like they should be able to play there. So I'm 100% for this, but I don't think the Padres do this unless they really think, well, Myers is going to be our third baseman next year, which is kind of strange to me because, you know, yeah, they do have some guys who probably need some shots in Cordero and Renfro, although I'm not really as high on Renfro as perhaps you are.
Well, I'm not that high on him, but he has performed this season, to be fair.
He's performed this season, but I still don't see him as much more than a fourth outfielder. And I'm very, very interested to see if really Myers can play defense enough to be a workable third baseman, because The Padres' rotation and pitching staff cannot deal with bad defense behind it. It's not going to work for them if they do.
Right. I don't know if he can. I mean, the bet against is the smart bet because, he's basically a guy who is, I don't know if I can call him a career outfielder, but yeah, he's kind of a career outfielder. I know you have that stint at first base, but
And as a catcher.
yeah, well, yeah, sure. But if we're gonna call him a catcher, he's also a third baseman then because he's probably get around, what, 20 games or so now for his career at third base, but he does have the arm for third base. It's a plus arm. He's certainly, lanky and, he doesn't stick out too much. If you just glanced at him at third base, you'd say, okay, whatever. But I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think he's gonna be good there. I don't think he will even be passable, but it's an interesting thing. And Myers is just a weird player in general because, we all expected him to be a really good hitter and he's been a fine hitter, but he hasn't been, Matt Holliday or what have you. And defensively and base running wise, he's always been weird to me because he has more physical gifts than people give him credit for. Like he shouldn't be a bad defender and he shouldn't be a zero on the base paths or whatever, because this is a dude who can run pretty well and yeah, he's supposed to have a good arm and all, but when you watch Will Myers, those attributes almost never come into play. Now, to his credit, he's gotten better in San Diego as a base runner, but there's a reason he's switched positions like three times now with the Padres. Remember he started off as a center fielder. That did not work. They moved him to first base, which is a heck of a jump. Then they had to move him back to the outfield. And I guess my big issue, or not issue, but my question here is, I wonder how much of this is just trying to keep him healthy because it seems like he cannot stay healthy as an outfielder.
Yeah, that's what's really interesting to me because, like you said, he's a plus runner. He's got 60 stolen bases over the last couple of years. His base running metrics tend to grade him out pretty highly. So he should be able to, you would think, be able to handle himself in that position. Standing at third base, I mean, third base tends to be one of those positions where it can wear on your back a little bit. You have the arm injuries, which could be an issue, but that's not much different from right field. But there's a lot of there's some risk to playing third base too. If you were really going low risk, you might move him to first base, but Eric Hosmer is there and teams value his defense so much, even though he's been hot garbage this season. Eric Hosmer has really not been so good this year. But what are you
No. That was an agreement. I was just like,
I just don't know why it's just a very weird situation in San Diego right now. I mean, they have a lot of pieces and it just doesn't seem like they will fit at any point.
yeah, I agree with that. And I guess they're just doing this to get the guys, the every outfielder's a chance. And I think Myers is the most able of the bunch to even try faking third base, and that's why they do this. And I also wonder if they're going to try to trade him this offseason, and this is just, window dressing for the next 6 weeks or whatever. Because, if you're going to trade one of them, he's probably the guy to trade due to the contract, right?
Yeah, I would definitely think so. I mean, because you're not going to be able to trade Hosmer, and by all accounts, I don't think the Padres want to. I could see something working out really nicely if the Rockies were pretty sure that Arenado wasn't going to re-sign. A swap where, maybe the Padres want to roll the dice on trying to get Arenado to agree to an extension. Swapping Myers for Arenado might be something that could work out for both the teams because Will Myers totally seems like a Colorado sort of player, and I could certainly see him moving in that direction if Arenado moves on.
I'm gonna be honest. I thought you were gonna say a Colorado type of person, and I was just remember when Ron Fowler basically came out and he didn't say this verbatim, but he basically was like, "Yeah, Will Myers thinks leadership is a boat," and you remember that because I was just like, "Why would you say this about your guy? Like, why would you throw him under the bus like that?" Oh, Will Myers. My favorite Will Myers story is how in St. Pete he owned two fish tanks and didn't own a single fish or a single pet that would require being in a tank. So he does seem like a Colorado kind of guy, doesn't
Yes, he does. Yes, he
he?
does. I want to talk a little bit about the Seattle situation. I brought up Robinson Cano playing some first base. He's since shifted back to second. I don't know how long that's going to last because there's a lot of weird stuff going on with what's going on with the infield in Seattle. And then Felix Hernandez moving to the bullpen, but now looks like maybe he's going to start today because they may need a spot starter with James Paxton's injury coming up. Although maybe they're going to give Roenis Elias some more moves going forward, or Marco Gonzalez, who's, you know, been fine for them. So I want to start with Cano, because the weird stuff going on has basically been with the shortstop situation. So with Gene Segura going on the paternity list, they moved D. Gordon to shortstop. When Segura comes back, where do you put D. Gordon if you're the Mariners?
See, if it were me, I'd put him in center field again.
Because... Well, you got to get Cameron Maybin into the lineup.
Okay. This is like, I don't think you have to. And I also know that, remember when Guillermo Heredia was having a good year?
No, I don't.
Early on, he had a decent season, and now he has a 70 OPS plus, which is actually worse than D. Gordon, because D. Gordon has not hit this season.
No,
and
no, yeah.
I'm very confused by their whole seemingly fascination with D. Gordon. You know, they batted him lead off for entirely too long, and now they don't want him. You know, make him move because they want to basically defer to him because he'll be their postseason second baseman. They made a big point out of that time and again, but this is a very weird roster, and it's very weird what they're doing with the roster. And yeah, it would seem like you just plug Cano back into second base, and if you get to the postseason, hey, you know, unfortunately for D, you know, he'll have to make the switch, but he's already made the switch in season this year. So, you know, I'm not sure why that's such a big impediment for them. And I don't know. It's just a weird situation, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's a very, again, like the Padres, it's kind of a weirdly constructed roster. Now, I do think the pieces fit together a lot better in Seattle. I'm a little surprised that Ryan Healy is playing well enough to make this a discussion, because I feel like if Healy wasn't playing as well and hitting as well as he has been recently, that you would just put him on the bench and put Cano at first and yeah, just go with that. But I think that Healy is hitting well enough at this point that you got to let him play. And if that's the case, to me, it means Maybin sits. And few people are as into Cameron Maybin as I am. But I would sit him, and I would move Gordon back to center field. And just like you said, it's not like Maybin's going to forget how to play center field come October if you make it to the playoffs. And you can just slot Gordon back in at second base where he's going to have to play. It's just... I think it's good to give Cano the reps at some of the other positions. I like the idea of him being able to play first base, because I'm not convinced Ryan Healy's going to be any good come 2 weeks from now or starting in 2019 or anything like that. It's just a shame that none of these guys can play catcher.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I'm not convinced Ryan Healy will be on the roster next year. I mean, he feels like a non-tender possibility. I know they gave up Pagan to get him, so maybe they'll have a little bit more attachment there, but I think it's totally possible he's not even Seattle Mariners starting first base the next season.
Yeah, but I think that's said, likely.
His hot streak did seemingly save his spot in the lineup, and yeah, but I would just say, I think if you're waiting, playing Cameron Maybin every day, you probably have bigger issues than Robinson Cano's spot in the lineup defensively.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that's funky about it is that Maybin's been probably a better hitter than D. Gordon this year, and I would certainly rather have him in center field than Gordon at this point, although both are very good, but they're very much the same player at this point, almost.
Yeah.
Except for the fact that Gordon can play all over the field, and Cameron Maybin is an outfielder, and that's it.
That's depressing. And a few things are more depressing on this team than what they've done with Felix Hernandez, as you mentioned. He had to move to the bullpen, and now it seems like they're bringing him back to the rotation because they realized, oh, we actually don't have enough starting pitchers to cover.
Shocker.
For, yeah, I mean, who would have known? Because the team who had to chart Wade LeBlanc out there by necessity, who knew they might be short on arms? So it's dire, man. I don't want to live in a world where Felix Hernandez is washed. You know what I mean? Like, he's 32. He should have another few years in him. And I kept waiting, and I know this is irrational, but I kept waiting for him to just have it click and all of a sudden go on a run where he's like, all right, Felix is still a real MLB starting pitcher, and it just never happened. And I'm starting to get concerned that it's not going to happen. I know that's stupid because he's had, like, what, 23 starts this season. He's been pretty bad. Like, it's probably not going to happen, but for some reason I have that illogical belief that eventually he's just going to click and he'll be fine. And I'm going to guess you do not share that feeling.
I want it so badly for him to be okay, and it just does not look like it. The velocity doesn't seem like it's there anymore, and I mean, that had been trending down for a long time, but the secondary stuff just can't play off it at this point. And I don't know if his head might be a little bit out of it too. I mean, it's got to be such a break for you to go from being this, the dominating pitcher that you were since you were like 16 years old, to whatever this is, a CC Sabathia type, guy who's got to really adapt at the end of their career in order to remain viable. When you talk about him being 32, that's just, I mean, he's been around forever. He's been pitching since 2004, so you never, or excuse me, 2005. So you never really think of it as a world without Felix, but like you said, he should have 4 or 5 more years in him. I would be very surprised if he starts next year in the Mariners rotation unless he has some sort of magical fountain of youth kind of spring training.
Yeah, I agree with that. He's younger than Wade LeBlanc. I mean,
Well,
he's.
Wade LeBlanc, I mean, he defies all physics and logic, so I don't know what we say there.
Wade LeBlanc is strength theory. But yeah, I don't think he's going to start next season in the rotation, barring some dramatic turnaround here in the last 6 weeks either. And I kind of wonder what they're going to do with him next year because that's the last guaranteed year of his contract. Are they just going to have him as a reliever airing the season? And are they going to be willing to release Felix Hernandez if after, 2 months or so he's sporting a 5 ERA as a reliever? I just can't imagine it. But at the same time, I guess they kind of did that with Ichiro. Of course, I don't even know what Ichiro's role is. The dude takes BP and he's in uniform constantly. He's in uniform more than some players. Honestly, he seems like he's in uniform more than some players they have. So I don't know. I'm confused by the state of things in Seattle, and I guess I've been confused by the state of things in Seattle all year. So nothing new there. But I'm very interested to see what they do with Cano and Hernandez next year, and that might be more telling than what they're doing with them right now.
Yeah, I think both of them, I think I would not be surprised at all to see both of them start on the first week of the season. Felix Hernandez will make the, fourth or fifth start for the Mariners, and Cano will play second base, and I don't think that's where they're going to end up come June of 2019. I think that'll end very quickly, with Cano moving to first base and Hernandez moving to some sort of bullpen role or a phantom DL stint or something like that. Or it wouldn't surprise me at all to hear that he needs a significant DL stint for, some sort of really reconstructive surgery to get his arm right.
Well, that's depressing.
It's bad. It's bad. So we'll talk quickly about Carlos Martinez. They're bringing him back to pitch in the bullpen in St. Louis. What do you think about that?
It's interesting. I guess basically they didn't have enough time to let him rehab as a starter, and they've been on a run where they think they can make the postseason still. And I guess this is one way to boost your team is to insert Martinez as a reliever. I will say it does seem a little unusual because how often do you see teams do this? You know what I mean? Like, it'd be like if the Cubs had decided before Yu Darvish's latest attempt at rehabbing, you know what? Let's just bring him back as a reliever and skip the whole, stretching him out process and whatnot. So I don't know. I'm intrigued, I guess, because in theory, yeah, it does help them, but it's a weird move, right?
Yeah, I think it's super, super weird, and I'm concerned about what it means for this team. So if you look at the rotation for the Cardinals, you've got Miles Mikolas, you've got John Gant, you've got Austin Gomber, Daniel Ponce de Leon, and Jack Flaherty. They've moved Luke Weaver into the bullpen. Tyson Ross, since they brought him in, has basically been a bullpen piece, and now Carlos Martinez is going to join them in the bullpen. And the thing about the guys that are in the Cardinals rotation right now is they've all been pitching really well on this run recently. So I wonder if this is about, we could let Martinez start, except he's not going to pull the full load. He's not going to throw 120 pitches when he goes out and starts because he's not ready for that. But with Flaherty pitching well, with Gomber pitching well, with Gant pitching well, with Ponce de Leon, someone that they seem to want to give a shot in the rotation, it seems to me like this is more about the other guys than Carlos Martinez. And to me, Martinez is the, maybe Flaherty, but Martinez is the only one of these guys who you'd really want to protect and make happy. So unless he really buys into this, I think it's a really weird decision. I would be really inclined to put Ponce de Leon in a role as kind of like his tandem starter and like bring him in the fourth or the fifth inning, but let Martinez start to get back to pitching in a starting role because I mean they're certainly not going to put Martinez in a bullpen role next year. That would be crazy. And I just don't think the guys like Gant and Gomber and Ponce de Leon are really nearly as good as they've been pitching recently. So I don't know if the Cardinals really if they want to look at them as long-term guys, great. But I think they'd probably be a little short-sighted to think that these guys are going to just have the Cardinals magic and continue to be great full-time starting pitchers.
Yeah, I mean, Ponce de Leon has a great story and all, but he's also given up, excuse me, in 17 innings, he has 10 strikeouts and 9 walks.
Right.
Like, great story, but probably not going to continue. Austin Gomber has a strikeout to walk ratio of 1.68. Gant's at 2. Yeah, I mean, I don't really buy any of these guys being more than maybe back-end options heading forward. So you're right, it is a little weird. It does seem like they're kind of riding the hot hand, so to speak, which can get you in trouble if you're not careful, and it
Right.
seems like this is more likely to result in trouble than anything good. And we kind of skipped over Luke Weaver getting demoted. He has been bad this year.
Yeah,
I mean, that
yes.
profile is a little weird. It's fastball changeup, the breaking ball never really developed. So I wonder if he's actually going to be a reliever for them heading forward, or if they're going to try to trade him, or if he's a candidate to start next season back in the minors and try to work on things a little bit. This is a never interesting team, and this recent run of theirs has really kind of papered over some of the issues we had with this team. It's made it easier to say, oh, there's a lot of talent here, and so on and so forth. But yeah, this is going to be a very fascinating team to watch during the winter because it seems like they have a lot of unanswered questions that they're going to need to address before next spring rolls around.
Yeah, and I actually think there's another factor involved here, which is that you talk about like there's no reason that Ponce de Leon, who has the best last name in the business, I love Daniel Ponce de Leon's story, but also his last name, should stay in this rotation. I don't think he's long for the rotation. I don't think Carlos Martinez is going to take his spot. I would be very surprised if we didn't see Adam Wainwright very soon. He had that really good rehab start the other day. In double A, and I wouldn't be surprised at all to see him take that spot. And you want to see them give Wainwright his due as he finishes out this contract with him, and it's going to be a feel-good story to see him pitch it, and pitch well, hopefully, for the Cardinals, maybe for the last time. But again, like if you're trying to look towards 2019, Wainwright's not going to be the guy. It's going to be Carlos Martinez, and I think he needs the shot.
Michael Wacha is also on a rehab assignment, so he could conceivably slot in here as well.
Yeah, and again, with all these guys coming back, and I mean, it's depth in the rotation. It's just not necessarily good depth. And Waka is a mystery, man. I never know what to expect to him from him from one day to the next.
I never have a clue. To his credit, he's had a good season. Well, he's had a good superficial season because the strikeout to walk ratio is not really there, but that seems like a common thing with this team, so I don't know. And of course, we addressed this, I think it was a week or two ago, with Tyson Ross's addition. It's such a weird team. I mean, you can't even, I don't know, you can't make heads or tails of necessarily who's going to be in the back end of that rotation in a week's time or 2 weeks' time because it seems like it's such in flux. And maybe they just figured, you know what? Let's not figure it out with Martinez. Let's just throw him in the bullpen and get him on the roster. And maybe by season's end, he'll be stretched out through his relief appearances. We can sneak him into our playoff rotation if we get to that point. I don't know. It's a
Yeah,
mess, man.
it is a mess. I second that entirely. So, and really, when you talk about the Cardinals actually having a shot at the playoffs at this point, that's a sign of what kind of a mess the National League is right now because you don't know who's going to come out of the West. You don't know who's going to come out of the Central. You don't know who's going to come out of the East. And right now, there are literally 8 teams that are still in it, I feel like, and a couple more on the fringes. So the Cardinals may need playoff starters because they may make it there. Who knows? They could win the Central and they could win the first or the second wild card.
It's complete chaos. That just means that one of these teams who we think looks the weakest in the National League, who like sneaks into the wild card game, be it the Cardinals, be it the Rockies, whomever, they're going to end up winning the World Series. It won't be the superpowers in the American League. It's going to be one of these teams who are just like, eh, they're going to get routed in the World Series. And then they get to the World Series and they win it in like 5 games.
I mean, it would be a great story, but I would throw up a little in my mouth if it was the Cardinals or the Rockies or something.
The Rockies would be fun, though, just from a like, I know they have bad run differential, and I don't really believe them as much as I probably should at this point in the season, but it'd be kind of fun to see a team win its first World Series like that, right?
I mean, if it were a team other than the Rockies, absolutely. I just have never been a Rockies guy, and they had their shot with the Matt Holliday slide and everything, so I just have a lot of trouble getting behind this team for some reason, and there's no logic behind it. Like, it may be just because psychically the purple uniforms turn me off. Like, it could be that stupid. I just, for some reason, I've never been able to get behind them. But man, I'll tell you, if we see Carlos Gonzalez playing for the Rockies in the World Series this year, I will lose it. I will lose it. Start to finish. Ian Desmond will go hit 500 in the World Series. It's going to be a weird year, man.
Yeah, I just want to introduce this potential scene to your imagination here, because I don't think you're giving it enough consideration. Say it's game seven. Say it's the bottom of the ninth inning. Rockies are trying. Well, it can't be game seven then, because the Rockies aren't going to be the home team. But I mean, okay, say it.
That would be pretty bizarre, man.
Yeah, so say it's game four. Rockies are going for the sweep. Bottom of the ninth inning, Wade Davis is on the mound. It's a very high leverage situation, very tense and all. And then you see Dinger, the dinosaur mascot, frolicking around behind home plate. Isn't that
off my television.
That's the image you want to see at the end of the baseball season, a giant purple dinosaur who doesn't wear pants but does wear a jersey. Trotting around behind home plate, frolicking with the fans. That's what I want to see.
It's so funny that we could have a Dinger Orbit World Series, but like then the opposite of that, the idea of a Philly Fanatic versus, you know, like Wally the Green Monster one, like I'm totally fine with. So there's no logic to my prejudices against the Rockies. Although Dinger does suck and will always suck.
Well, that's a positive note to end on. I was going to throw the Braves mascot out there as one who makes no sense whatsoever and just looks like a tan or a flesh-colored Phillies fanatic.
Yeah, that's pretty bizarre. Well, we've spent a lot of time on our first two segments. We have some other stuff that we do want to touch on. We'll try to hit quickly. There have been a couple of trades that are worth talking about. The Phillies acquired Justin Bour from the Marlins. Making him, I guess, the next to last of the Marlins regulars that we expected to be dealt in their cost cutting. I think the last man standing is National League MVP candidate JT Realmuto. But the Phillies picking him up, I thought, was super, super weird, because remember, they've already got several first basemen between Carlos Santana and Rhys Hoskins. That doesn't stop them from acquiring more. They picked up Bour to be a bench bat, and they only gave up Mackenzie Mills for him. So do you like this deal for the Phillies?
Yeah, I was just surprised another team didn't make it. Yeah. And yeah, once the Marlins traded Cameron Maybin, I think we all knew they were pulling the plug again.
Yeah, I find it just so weird. I get that they wanted a left-handed bat off the bench. They kind of switch hit a lot, but they were a very right-handed team, especially on their bench. But yeah, it's kind of weird. I definitely think other teams could have made this move instead of them. But he's a nice little backup for Santana. You just think that if Santana goes down, you pretty much certainly want to hit Rhys Hoskins at first base.
I guess talent's talent. If you can add, if this was the best available player in their opinion, then it makes sense to add him. But I agree, it's a weird fit.
In addition, the Athletics picked up Fernando Rodney from the Twins, and they gave up a guy who I think is kind of interesting in Dakota Chalmers. He's not exactly a nobody. Not to rag on Mackenzie Mills too much, but I don't think he's the same quality caliber of prospect that Dakota Chalmers is. But the Athletics pick up Fernando Rodney in this attempt to build a bullpen out of other teams' spare parts or guys who are on expiring deals, and I like it. I think this was a smart move for the Athletics.
Oh, I love Fernando Rodney. He's one of the funnest players in baseball. I'm never going to root against Fernando Rodney getting prime time coverage, so to speak. So,
prime time in Oakland.
He's going to be in the postseason. He's not going to close the game or anything, but we're going to see him shoot that arrow at some point, I hope. I know he said he had a different celebrate. I don't know. The point is, he has a club option for next season. It'll be interesting to see if they exercise that or if they find a way to trade him. And, you know, in five starts, he hasn't walked a – excuse me, five starts. Now, that would be notable right there. Fernando Rodney was making –
guess who else is going to the opener, and it's bad guys.
Yes. In five appearances, he hasn't allowed a run or a walk. So, good start to his – athletics career, and who knows, maybe he'll get a start in the postseason.
I mean, it's the way that the Athletics pitching staff is throwing right now, there's no way he can crack that top four really of Trevor Cahill, Edwin Jackson, Brett Anderson, and Mike Fiers.
Led the world champions last year in innings pitched. Put some respect on his name.
I really should, but let me tell you, Sean Manet has been the fifth starter for this team over the last couple of weeks. He's been the fifth most effective starter, which, my God, I cannot believe that, you know, Nick Martini's leading off for this team. And, you know, you've got this rotation of doom made up of guys who are only 30 years old and over, with the exception of Manea, and this shutdown bullpen of Ryan Buchter and Rodney and Blake Treinen and Juris Familia. It's just a weird Athletics team, and I'm completely here for it. I'm happy to be wrong about the efficacy of the Athletics this season.
It's amazing. It really is amazing what this team is doing. And
MVP candidate Jed Lowry. we've got some releases that are somewhat important, I think, to talk about. We'll put three of them together. The Braves released Fernando Salas, which is not terribly surprising. The Padres released Phil Hughes, which is not terribly surprising. And the Orioles released Danny Valencia, who hasn't been very good this season. And his release seems only not so surprising because, well, the Orioles are terrible, and Valencia wasn't the most terrible of all the Orioles. But Valencia's got to be in the running for worst teammate of all time at this point, because I have to think that his release had to have something to do with his clubhouse presence and not necessarily his production at this point.
Yeah, I mean, the guy bounces around. He's never in the same place for very, very long, and I don't know, man. I thought they might actually be able to trade him up a deadline to a contender so he could be a right-handed bench bat because, you know, in theory, his production's there. You know, he can hit lefties a little bit, but it just seems like for whatever reason, he is horrendous and very grating on teammates or what have you. Because, I mean, just count the teams. In the last, since he left Minnesota, he's played with Boston, Baltimore, Kansas City, Toronto, Oakland, Seattle, and Baltimore again. That's a lot of teams in, what, six seasons?
Yeah, and among the regulars on this Orioles team, obviously the best hitter was Machado, but only Mark Trumbo and Adam Jones have put up better offensive numbers this season than him.
That's depressing.
It's really bad. The Orioles are 50 games out of first place. I mean, things are really ugly in Baltimore, but still, like, you know, you got to at least field a competitive team, and the Orioles are like, Pedro Alvarez, I guess. So,
well, I have no issues with El Toro getting never luck either, but the Orioles are basically eliminated from the postseason. Like, their elimination number in the wild card hunt is two, but when you think about it, the American League West teams all play each other enough that the Orioles have actually no chance of making the postseason. So they have been eliminated from postseason contention on August 19th/20th.
And so now the Orioles will be out there giving Renato Nunez the reps at third base. As we all predicted before the season started.
I'm fine with that, though. I think, you know, I don't think Renato Nunez is going to be good, but remember, he was a downless prospect entering the season.
And he's been playing okay recently. There's nothing wrong with giving him a shot at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, you do what you got to do. I'm a big Jace Peterson guy. I would like to see him starting every day, but also I'm a crazy person, so take that for what it's worth.
Brian, we do a podcast about minor transactions. You didn't have to tell anyone that you were a crazy person. It's pretty much, it's implied, man.
Yeah, it certainly is. The Cubs brought in two more players who may make their postseason roster if they make the postseason, which is becoming more and more in doubt every year, every day, it seems like. But they traded for Terrence Gore from the Royals, and they signed Jorge De La Rosa. Both these guys seem like guys who are kind of specifically designed for October. Gore is a pinch running specialist who can't hit worth a lick. De La Rosa is a guy who was cut loose by the Diamondbacks who could be a bullpen piece if enough people get injured, I think, maybe for the Cubs. But I don't see either of them really moving the needle one way or the other. Do you?
No, of course not. I just love Terrence Gore because, you know, in our heads, he's like a fixture in the postseason. And in reality, he has 14 career regular season plate appearances.
Yeah.
I love that. I hope he's around for another 10 years. I hope he's just always a fixture on these winning teams. And you said he can't hit a lick. He can't hit an eighth of a lick, man. He has a 555 OPS to AAA this season as a 27-year-old. That dude hit a lick. Come on, let's keep that for guys who are bad, not so bad that, frankly, I mean, thank God he's fast, right?
Yeah.
Otherwise, Lord.
He hits about 50% below the league average in AAA. So that's really saying something. You're right. That's pretty ugly. So he is an exception to the rule that you have to hit occasionally to be a major league player, because he doesn't. He's a pitcher and not a very good one at the plate.
Yeah, I mean, God bless him.
There are a couple of maybe fifth starters too strong, sixth starters, seventh starters who switched teams. The Angels brought in Odorizzi to Spain from the Marlins, ostensibly because they have no other starting pitchers. The Brewers acquired Jake Thompson from the Phillies as some depth, and that may have something to do with the fact that Jimmy Nelson does no longer looks like he'll be coming back this season, which I kind of thought was a pipe dream anyway, but hey, whatever, you know, believe in what you choose. And then the Tigers picked up Nick Tepish, potentially to be the replacement for Mike Fiers in that rotation, potentially to be just another warm body. Do you have any strong feelings about any of these moves?
No.
All right.
What sociopath?
I mean, Jake Thompson has really fallen from grace. He was considered to be a pretty high-end prospect when he was eventually traded as part of that Cole Hamels deal. It hasn't turned out well at all for him in AAA. He gets some strikeouts, but his control is just non-existent.
Can you name the Angels rotation right now?
Oh, God. Well, I assume Despaigne is going to step in there. Didn't Tyler Skaggs go to the DL?
Didn't he? Let me load the page, because I was actually just trying to bait you into.
I mean, like, my guess is, like, we're going to have Andrew Heaney in there. I think he's still healthy. And then beyond that, I really don't know at this point who they're running out there.
All right, so it is, per roster resource, Andrew Heaney, Brea,
Pena. Yeah.
And okay, you already named him. And then they have a open spot with a to be determined listed for Wednesday. So Lord knows if you're.
It's going to be Osmer Morales, I think, who's going to be up for that.
Never heard of him.
Oh, well, I mean, that's the point.
Is that a real person? Yeah, it really is a real person. Okay, fair enough. I thought you were just making up a name.
I
you were just like testing me.
I could have been. Right now, the Angels have seven or eight starting pitchers on the disabled list.
Yeah.
If you don't count Shohei Ohtani, who can't pitch because he's injured.
Let's just address this. Osmer Morales. He was a minor league free agent signing from the Mariners organization, not last November, but the November before last. So if you just want an idea of how hard up the Angels are for starting pitchers, they're bringing up guys who even the Mariners are like, nah, not a prospect, not on our radar. That's dire, man. Yes. Wow.
Yeah. So speaking of not really prospects, I want to talk over a couple of, at least list some players to be named later that we've now learned as a result of plenty of our deadline deals. Nolan Blackwood is going to the Tigers as part of the Mike Fiers trade. Joshua Javier is going to the Rangers as part of the Jake Diekman trade. Sherton Apostel is going to the Rangers as part of the Keone Kella trade. Alexander Ovalles is going to the Rangers as part of the Cole Hamels trade. And Brian Baker is heading to the Blue Jays for Sungwan Oh. All those guys are guys that I don't think we have strong feelings about. They're really, really low-tier prospects, live arms. But we did find out about a player to be named later that does matter. As part of the Chris Archer trade, remember, Chris Archer was traded from the Rays to the Pirates for Austin Meadows, Tyler Glasnow, and a player to be named later. Well, it turns out that that player to be named later is going to be Shane Baz, who is a really legit pitching prospect. So this does kind of change the calculation for the Archer trade. And I know you've got some feelings about Baz, so let's talk about him a little bit.
Yeah, I think he's a very interesting pitching prospect, and this certainly swings the deal. Before we were kind of talking about Meadows and Glasnow and how they were flawed, even if they had upside, and, you know, it was kind of risky. And frankly, I wanted them to be the second and third parts, or, you know, at least the first and third parts of a deal, as opposed to the top two parts of a deal. And I think this deal accomplishes that, because I think this guy right here is, he's just a very interesting pitching prospect, and he was one of my favorite Pirates prospects. You know, he's a guy who has a potentially really deep arsenal. He has the body to start, and yeah, I just think it's a good get. And obviously, you know, he's years away. He needs to work on his command. He's probably going to drop a pitch or two so he can, you know, improve his top offerings and whatnot. But I think he's a very interesting player, and it's a good gift for Tampa Bay, in my opinion.
Yeah, I wouldn't call him the best part of this trade. I still think Meadows is still the top guy in this deal. Sure. But Baz is, he's what, 18? He's a long way off. He's got a remarkable velocity on his fastball. He hit something like 98 in the run-up to the most recent draft. Good spin rate. You know, you could definitely see why this is a guy that teams would try to, you know, covet, and could be eventually, he's got the upside of maybe a number one or a number two starter. So this is a significant piece for the Rays. You said this kind of swings the deal. Do you think that this was a win-win trade now for the Rays and for the Pirates?
Man, it could be win-win. It just depends on how Archer develops, how he takes to Pittsburgh, because they had seemingly messed with his pitch selection a little bit, and I don't know if they still have. I honestly just haven't went back and checked it. And right now, my head's a little bit of a fog, because Baz was born 3 days after my 9th birthday.
Oh my gosh. Ugh, I'm just, man, you youngins, and the fact that Baz is so young at this point is just, it makes me a little sick to my stomach, guys.
But I do like this deal for the Rays now. And obviously Glasnow has performed well for them. Better, I think, than either one of us would have expected. Because, you know, the old saying in baseball is that strike throwers are born, they're not made. To his credit, you know, he's thrown more strikes, and it was an immediate change. And that's not something you usually see. So if that sticks, all of a sudden the deal looks like a big win for the Rays. You know, they're and, you know, I am higher on Meadows, I think, than you are, Excuse me. I think I see some shades of Christian Yelich. I'm not saying he's going to be Christian Yelich, but you can see some shades of it in his game. And it's an interesting profile. And if he stays healthy, which, you know, putting him on the Tropicana Field turf doesn't seem like the best idea to keep him healthy, but what can you do? You know, so interesting deal. And I think it's a favorable deal for the Rays at this point. And I hope that Archer does well in Pittsburgh, because he's a very likable guy. And yeah, I hope it's a win-win, but at this point, I would say the Rays probably got a pretty good deal for Archer.
Yeah, I think from a process standpoint, I think this is fine for the Rays. I really would have liked to have seen them get one more elite guy if that guy was out there. You know, you really would have wanted to see them get somebody at the caliber of maybe like a Fernando Tatis or a Bo Bichette or an Eloy Jimenez, because Archer is so good, in my opinion. But if you're not going to get that kind of guy who I would assume was not available in any sort of trades like this, then this is a pretty nice package. So good on the Rays for doing well enough in that deal, and bad on the Rays for almost literally everything else.
Well, I mean, I don't think you include him in that group, but supposedly Francisco Mejia was out there for the taking in an Archer deal, and they said no.
I don't know. If the secondary pieces were pretty decent, and the Padres have enough secondary pieces where they could have been, I would have taken Mejia.
Let me put it this way. You believe he's a catcher?
Yeah, I do believe Mejia is at least a part-time catcher for at least a few years.
Okay. Well, I don't know what the secondary parts were, but I do know that had a lot of smoke in the industry. And it'd be fascinating to learn what else was going to be a part of that deal and how you compare. And, you know, one of my great whales, or white whales, or whatever, what the second best offer for David Price was back in the day.
Man.
I have never heard a package that was proposed. I know Kylie McDaniel of Fangraphs just floated that this deal they made, even with Baz, still pales in comparison to the proposed deals from a year or two or three ago. And I don't know what those deals were either, honestly. But the price one, I want to know what was number two for them, because boy, that was a tough one.
It was such a weird trade when it happened. Now, obviously, Willy Adames has come into his own as you know, at least a part that should be helpful for this team long term. But yeah, I would love to know too. That was, because at the time that deal was a definite disappointment, I feel like.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, shoot, I don't even know. Is Nick Franklin still an organized ball, or is he driving Ubers full time?
It's funny
now
that you asked that. I actually just looked into that, and I do not think he's got a job right now. He was in the Brewers organization, but I think he is currently not playing.
Is he hurt?
I don't think so.
Well, that's depressing. Well, and then Drew Smyly is hurt, or was hurt, and is working his way back with the Cubs organization. So I hope, you know, I hope Smyly gets back. He was actually very fun to watch, but that trade looked bad at the time. And yeah, you're right. Adames, he's probably going to be a pretty good player, but boy, I don't know, man.
If I'm not mistaken, I don't think either. Both Brad Miller and Nick Franklin are last seen with the Brewers, but I think they're both not in their minor league system at this point.
Franklin's on the DL. That's all. Oh, yeah, he's on 60-day.
All right. Well, that's better. It was Miller who was released and is no longer playing for the team.
Yeah, and it's weird that Miller doesn't have a job because he can hit.
He will next year. He'll get an NRI with somebody if he still wants to play.
Royals.
Oh, that would fit really nicely. I also wouldn't be surprised if, since the Mariners can't actually acquire any talent via trade at this point, to see him show up there.
Oh my God, Brad Miller back! You know what? The funny thing would be Brad Miller blossoming into an all-star shortstop after rejoining the Mariners. It wouldn't happen.
If he at some time becomes the fifth best shortstop in the American League, I will die.
Yeah, so he needs to go to like Kansas City or Baltimore, or actually Baltimore would make plenty of sense for him.
It really would. You know, I think you could come up with a really fun outfield if Miller comes back, or a really fun infield if Miller comes back a little bit, and him and Tim Beckham, you know, get a lot of good stories in there.
Oh my gosh, that would. Cleveland should give him a shot as an outfielder. I know he's supposedly not good in the outfield, but bring him in and try him in the outfield. See if you can.
Let's be fair. Brad Miller isn't good at any position defensively. I mean, he was okay at first base. That was about it.
And even okay might be stretching. I mean, he's not, you know, Yandy Diaz bad or anything, but he's bad.
Oh, man. We got some Yandy Diaz content later. Don't just you wait. All right, so let's blow through some injuries. We got Kenley Jansen heading to the disabled list. That actually set off a motion of a couple of things, where Kenta Maeda is moving to the bullpen, which is kind of gross, and we can talk about that a little bit. But also in other National League third place in their division news, both Kelvin Herrera and Ryan Madsen went to the DL for the Washington Nationals. So. Two teams, two bullpens in serious trouble, and two teams that are struggling to get back into playoff contention, the Dodgers and the Nationals. Any quick thoughts on Jansen, Herrera, or Madsen?
Yeah, they probably want Brandon Kinsler and Sean Kelly back, don't they?
I mean, probably, but at this point, the Nationals, I mean, I heard the Nationals just put Harper and Murphy on their trade waivers to see if they can pass them through waivers, and maybe there will be a deal there, you know, post. That would be the craziest thing. I if Daniel Murphy gets traded before August 31st. Obviously, Harper won't, but I mean, it would be wild to see if the Nationals are still making moves to burn it down a little bit.
Yeah.
The Jansen thing is ugly. The Dodgers bullpen, you know, Scott Alexander is going to be closing now. Kenta Maeda is going to not get any of his bonuses ever for starting games, which is really no fault of his own. He's been pitching all right this year. But the Dodgers, they could really use another reliever or two.
I remember seeing, I believe it was the NFL, a player fell short of his percentage of snaps, whatever he needed to earn an incentive. And the team said, nope, you have played so well this season. That doesn't matter. We're going to pay you that anyway. And I really hope the Dodgers do something similar. I don't know if that's allowed baseball CBA. Maybe I'm missing something on that front. But give the guy his money. Don't do this.
Yeah.
Like, and also, Maeda is going to be a part of their team heading forward. It's not like he's a pending free agent or whatever. You know, do the right thing, period, but do the right thing by a guy who's probably going to be pretty important to your next two or three rosters.
Yeah, I think there's room here for the Dodgers to completely renegotiate his contract if he looks like he's going to be a relief pitcher going forward, which may be the best role for him. I'm not knocking, you know, should he be a reliever, because I think he'll be very, very good as a late-inning reliever. But if that's the case, they got to rework his contract to give him some of the money back that he would otherwise have earned if they had kept him as a starter, because he'd start for probably 15, 20 teams in the league.
Yeah.
Carlos Correa's come off the DL, which is great news for the Astros. They have some bad news, too, as former top prospect Francis Martes is going to undergo Tommy John surgery. And Jose Altuve is ready to come off the disabled list. So good things for the Astros, but also a bad thing for a once top prospect. And I don't think Martes qualifies as that anymore.
No, and the Astros need their bats back. I mean, that offense has kind of been scuffling as of late. Mm-hmm. So good timing for them, right as the Athletics are on their heels. So hopefully for their sake, Altuve and Correa can shake off the rust pretty quickly.
Yeah, I agree. Leonis Martin of the Indians, really scary situation with him, suffered a bacterial infection that compromised a number of his internal organs and will probably miss the rest of the season, which is the last thing that the Indians want because they need outfielders like I need a sandwich right now. But just a scary situation for him to have an actual life-threatening illness that kept him off the field.
Yeah, it's horrible. It's horrible timing, obviously, as well. Not that there's any good time for a life-threatening bacterial infection, but, you know, from a baseball point of view, yeah, awful timing, and hopefully he makes a quick and full recovery because he was having a pretty solid season.
Yeah, he really was. He was a nice pickup for the Indians. I really liked that move. Logan Morrison will miss the rest of the season due to a hip surgery that he's going to undergo, which isn't that big of a deal because apparently his bat had missed the entire season anyway for the Twins. Disappointing move when I thought this was going to be a pretty useful contract for the Twins. It really wasn't at all this year. He was quite a disappointment offensively.
Oh, I dug this move for the Twins. I thought it was really savvy, really smart. And I didn't think he was going to repeat last year's performance, but I didn't think he would be, you know, one of the worst everyday hitters in baseball. So, yeah, rough break for him. And hopefully he gets healthy and, you know, he goes back out there next year and reestablishes his value a little bit because this was a brutal season for him.
And then just to let you know, going back to the Nationals and the Dodgers, while they had some trouble in their bullpens, Steven Strasburg looks to be ready to come off the DL, and so is Hyunjin Ryu, who's actually already popped off the DL. So good news for their starting rotations, bad news for pretty much literally everything else for those two teams right now.
Such is the way of life.
The Cubs have some more disappointing news. Yu Darvish has a setback in his recovery. He's going to be getting an MRI. Looks like he almost certainly won't pitch the rest of the season. Again, you talk about the Logan Morrison being a deal that you were really into. I was super into this Yu Darvish deal, and boy, it has not gotten off to a good start for the Cubs.
I don't think we're going to see him the rest of the season, and it's starting to get to the point where I'm wondering if we're even going to see him next season.
Yeah, if he goes under the knife for another Tommy John, which is kind of some of the indications might be going that way, this is really rough because the best part of this signing for the Cubs was the idea that he would be good for the first couple of seasons for the deal, at least. And then, yeah, he might be an expensive, diminishing starter in the future. And I just really like to watch him pitch. I wish he'd come back.
Yeah, he seems like a cool guy as well.
Yeah.
So it's a brutal industry, man.
It really is. It's tough for everyone. So I hope he gets well soon. But, yeah, we'll see him in 2019, hopefully. And then we've got a lot of call-ups to cover, some more interesting than others, but I'll try to hit these relatively quickly. The biggest name that's been called up recently or will be called up in the next couple of days is probably Michael Kopech of the Chicago White Sox. Huge fastball, kind of had some interesting personal, I won't say issues, but he's kind of a character and kind of not everybody's favorite character at that. But man, has he got a fastball. And he was, of course, part of that Chris Sale trade. And now he's going to be making his major league debut. So how do you feel about Michael Kopech?
I'm very interested in watching him pitch. And I don't know. I mean, you know, the character stuff, look, a lot of prospects have character stuff. I don't know, you know, Seemingly nowadays, like Brent Honeywell, when he gets called up eventually, we're going to be talking in the same terms, right? That he's kind of wild and kind of funny at times, and also maybe a little annoying if you're his player. But yeah, I don't really hold that against him. And, you know, I mean, think about it this way. If you were in Michael Kopech's situation, you'd probably be a little wild too as a personality, right?
Well, yeah, and, you know, it's more important that he's a little bit wild as a pitcher, not as a personality. And, you know, again, 22 years old when he makes his debut. I mean, none of us were angels when we were in our early 20s and late teens, except for you, probably. You're an old soul, so you were probably just fine. But
oh, no, I was a bloody moron. I mean, I'm stupid now. I was way dumber then. Oh, my gosh. But the thing is, I didn't have an elite fastball, so there wasn't.
I would assume not. Otherwise, you would certainly not be here with me right now. He struck out so many people at every level. I mean, it's just going to be fun to watch him throw, I think. But yeah, no control at this point. He kind of thought to be a relief prospect potentially, and his delivery is a little itchy, but he's kind of slowed his delivery a little bit. If he can get some separation between that fastball and his changeup, I think he could really be like a really fun starter for this White Sox team.
Yeah, we'll see what Coop can do of him, and we'll see, more importantly, what Jamie Shields can do of him. So you knew I was going to go there.
I could not have been more disappointed if you didn't. So I'm glad that you did. A couple of other starting pitchers that came up that are worth talking about, some interesting guys. Tuki Toussaint came up and made his major league debut for the Braves. It went pretty well. Steven Gonsalves, top prospect for the Twins, is about to come up and make his debut. And Sean Reed Foley, who's been kind of up and down the prospect hype train with the Toronto Blue Jays, came up and made his first start in the majors. So any of these three guys really jump out at you as someone you want to talk about?
Oh, Tuki.
Tuki.
I mean, yeah, Tuki's very interesting to me. You know, that curveball. We've been hearing about that curveball for years.
Yeah.
And he's just fun. I don't know. I'm very interested to see if they shift him to the bullpen, if they make the postseason, and also if they use Gahara in that role. And I'm also interested to see if they trade him this winter, because I'm not really sure he has a spot in that rotation for long. They have so many other arms on the way who are conceivably better prospects. So Tuki's a fun pitcher to watch. And also, I think, you know, we're basically talking about three guys here who their best case scenario is developing into a mid-rotation starter, right? So we're not talking necessarily about, you know, frontline guys. And I think the other two are a little bit more boring to me, just because Tuki, I guess maybe the name plays into it too, honestly. Tuki is just a fun name to say. And he just, yeah, he's a fun pitcher with that curveball.
I really like Steven Gonsalves. I'm going to be honest. I kind of think that he could be a big deal for a Twins team that desperately needs another impactful starting pitcher.